Blog Talk Radio.
Assalamualaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam. It's been a challenge this morning.
Goodness. Goodness, goodness, goodness. We are. Back on Monday. I mean, at least we didn't get had the issues we had last week. So, yeah. I'm doing a lot.
Seems to be those anti-MAP4, MAP5 forces out there, huh?
Every time. Yes, but we're back on the air. Jim Ronnie, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Yes. So here we go. We got you back in here. So we wanted to let you check in, but I didn't want you to get cut off. Tell us about your hijab, and then we're going to check in with you about the convention last week. But just tell us what has your hijab, either tightening or shifting, this is glorious Monday morning.
Greetings to the audience, and actually, because of the difficulties that we've had, I guess I will limit most of my time to the guests that we've been trying to have for the last week. But I will say that yes, it's been an interesting week. The previous week, through the weekend, being on the ground with the staging, I guess I can use that, of the Republican National Committee here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So I think most of my, of course, we're on the same roller coaster as everybody with all the news that keeps coming out. I guess most of my my whatever would have presented some difficulties and some questions and, you know, additional things that I thought need to be worked out. I actually can tie those in to my comments about the convention itself.
Okay. Yes, we're going to give you some air time to talk to us about that. I was just going to let you know, last night we had this call. It was just about 44,000 black women and some men on a call, national call. With the last minute, as soon as President Biden, I got off the call with Study All Islam in the morning. We were doing this a month ago, and I'm going to let her brief everyone on what that was about. And then I went to a training session to facilitate a training on people who wanted to run for office. So in the middle of talking to them about how to respond to events of crisis or how to handle, you know, like last week, what happened with the shooting incident with number 45 and how to handle media and social media and things like that and how not to get yourself in trouble when things happen like that. Because the first thing that happens is people go to social media, they make comments, some of them make flippant comments, some people act emotionally, some people try to be, what is the word, not crass, but sarcastic.
That's probably
right?
A good word, yes. I think crass is probably a good word, yes.
Yes, but that does not translate well, right, on social media. It just does not translate.
Right.
So say things like that about, even if you don't like that individual, and I'm going to tell you, I will not be doing backflips for a person like that. But they are still the former president of the country. There's some things you cannot say. There's some things that you cannot post. There's some things that you cannot write. And regardless of how you feel, even about the current president or judge or Supreme Court or any elected official, some things you cannot say. And that's just part of a discipline or an officer or anybody like that. You just cannot say it. So I was doing this course. That was the beginning. I was into that, and I was talking to him about it. And I heard the ding on my phone. Actually, my phone lights up first. It gives me a light up when there's a message. And I saw the light, and I just happened to look down, and then the ding came in. It says, President Biden will not seek re-election. And then I heard the dings all around the room. And I pivoted to that discussion in the room. And then another light came, and it was for an emergency meeting for Black women, women in our sorority, all of this for that evening. And then another one tonight. We have another one, California Black Women's Collective. But the one last night was a national meeting, and it was being called with the elected women in the Divine Nine sororities, you know, the California Congressional Contingency, a bunch of actresses and producers and women like Dr. Janetta Cole, who's like the head of, she used to be the president of Spelman, now she's with Spelman, she's at another college. And this call was, it was just phenomenal in the breadth of who was in the room. Everybody from like Jennifer Lewis and Sarah Jones and like, you know, Jasmine Crockett and Beverly, and of course Beverly and Maxine Waters and Beyonce sent her message and Michelle Obama, everybody. Anybody you can think of who is these Black women and influential, from our mayors and, you know, all of us were elected. But 44,000 women jumped on this last minute call to talk about the magnitude of this moment, but also the soberness of the moment. Because I'm going to be very frank with you, I just thought she'd be jumped over. Because that's what I said in the meeting. Before it happened, I just figured when he said he was going to step aside, they'd find a way to jump over it, her. And that's exactly what happened at first, right? Nancy Pelosi came out and said, we ought to have this open process. Well, just now, as we were talking, we were trying to get this, she finally endorsed her. I think what helped is because Nancy Pelosi was pushing Gavin Newsom. And we talked about that, sister, Amakala Alaji, we talked about that, how she was pushing Gavin Newsom. Well, Gavin said that he would not go up against Kamala. He just would not do that. They were really good friends and they came up together. He would just not do that. And he endorsed her. He was the first governor to endorse her. So I think that gave a lot of people a room to breathe who said that. She endorsed her today. Why that's important is I know people have some misgivings and they want that, but my misgiving is I cannot do this other dude. I just cannot do it. My memory is not as short as some people about what it was like to live between 2016 and 2020 with young brown and black young men coming up in middle school and high school and getting ready to send them off to Morehouse and having to be able to breathe until they called me and told me they were safe at home or in their dorm. And I don't want to live like that. So I'm ready to work.
I sent out my own message to family and say, we ride at dawn. Whatever we need to do, we ride at dawn. So there's my spiel. But I want to hear what happened last week because we are getting ready to go to Chicago. I was planning to go to Chicago. I pulled back. And we are scheduled to be in Puerto Rico that week. But now I will evaluate my plan. My family lives. I have family that live in Chicago as well as Missouri, but we will see. So, it's my morning. But we will see. But I understand the misgiving, Sister Free. I understand. I have to call you guys by different names, since you have the first same person name.
In regard to what you would have to figure this out.
Imam Muhammad gave Amatullah her name and he gave me my name.
Oh, is that right? I did not know that.
Yes.
Yes. We were both in Chicago at the same time.
Right. It was actually three of us that he gave the name Amatullah right at almost the same time. And Sabri and Sharif. Amatullah Sharif, who was made her transition two years ago.
Beautiful. I did not know that. And it looks like our Lord's brother has come into the room.
Assalamu alaikum.
We were just checking in, so let's let you check in, but then I know the system was getting ready to say, to tell me something, Sister Imrani. So we let you check in, and then I'm back to Sister Imrani. Great. Did he drop? I think he dropped.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, it's all dropped. So go ahead, Sister Imrani. It's yours.
Oh, okay. Yes, I was just going to make a comment about what you had said about Kamala Harris, and that at this time I don't see where there was any logical decision that could be made other than to advance her, because that would be given conflicting messages that a person is qualified to be the vice president, but yet they are not qualified. The next to run president was not going to continue the run or going to the next election season. And, yeah, she's going to have a lot of obstacles, but as a person outside or looking in, to me that was the most logical thing that could have happened. That made more sense for them just to put their support behind her.
You know, Cheryl mentioned that we had talked before about an alternative candidate. I see Brother Ismail in Dallas has his hand up, and Brother Fleming has just rejoined us. So what do you want to do, Cheryl?
Yeah, let's get Brother Fleming check in, and then we'll go to Brother Ismail.
Okay. Brother Fleming,
Brother Fleming, you're on. All right, hold on just one second.
Yeah, I'm trying to get to the house. I'm just leaving a funeral, literally. So I'm in my car still. But I was just enjoying the conversation. Give me about 5 minutes to be home so you won't hear the background noise and I'll be able to communicate without interference. Okay?
All right.
Okay.
No problem. Let's get to Brother Ishmael. Let me unmute him. Brother. What?
And I was able to get in. So I don't know if you discussed the financial benefit of selecting Kamala versus everyone else. Where, you know, Biden has all of this money. Say it again.
Yes. We haven't
y'all
yet, but I'm going to get to it. We didn't yet, but can get to it. Let's go.
Right. And I was saying, I mean, Biden has all this money where his campaign has funds, and the only person that can legally use it is Kamala.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I mean, if they transferred those funds to a super PAC, they could do that, but only $2,500 of those millions, 90 million or however many millions it is, could go to a new choice. So just that alone, even if you're not 100% sold on her becoming the, you know, the next candidate, just that alone should be enough, in my opinion, to choose her. And if they don't, I mean, it's going to be even crazier, in my opinion. If they choose not to choose her, it's almost like it's a self-destructive move, in my opinion.
Mm.
So I'll start right there.
No, I agree with you. Because it was the Biden-Harris, ticket, she gets control of that 80-some-odd million dollars, and it's a seamless transfer. Anybody else, there's a limit to how he could. And then this is for the audience, what Brother Ishmael is talking about. Anybody else, he could only transfer. There's a limit to how much he could transfer to another candidate, or he could transfer it all to a PAC that he controls, but there can be no coordination between the PAC and the candidate legally. They can't have a say in how he transfers them. And then he can donate, he could transfer it to the DNC, and then the DNC, conference, he could send it to them, and then they could dole out the money. But the DNC is not guaranteed to give it to Kamala's campaign. They would give it to Senate campaigns and other national campaigns. So that's the only other way. If not, and it didn't have to go to the presidential campaign, it could go to all these other campaigns, which is the way the DNC works. So this is the benefit. And yesterday, within a matter of 5 hours of the announcement, she raised, in 5 hours, she had raised $27 million. But total, she raised $50 million yesterday in just a few hours.
Yeah.
And I believe they've already made an amendment. Sorry. I believe they've already made an amendment to transfer the victory fund over to her campaign also, because there's a victory fund that Biden had. And I think they've already made the amendment to move it over.
They did with the FEC. We got a word last night when we were on the call that Nikki Haley because, you know, she does not like him, even though she spoke at his at the RNC, I want to hear about that from Sister Ronnie. She does not like him. And someone said something last night in our Black Women's Meeting that she was going to transfer money to come
Well, actually, that was a group of former Nikki Haley supporters who had already pulled away from that. Yes, and so it's not Nikki Haley per se. It's a group of her former supporters that had decided to give their support to Kamala.
Yeah, they call them I never say his name, so just so you know, Never 45.
Yes.
Which we found very, very ironic, funny, because they said they were not going to follow her lead and give money to him, but they would gladly give money to
Harris. I personally agree with Ishmael. I like that, you know, the that she's starting out with quite the chest of money. We made in less than 3 hours, we were able to, small donations from $3 to $10,000, $1 million. And that was just in 3 hours last night when we got off the phone. Star Jones was the one who was leading. Star Jones and Jennifer Lewis, the actress, was asking. And we had $1 million. It was $1,600,000. And so I didn't check my email to see how much it is right now, but I know it's more than that. And then the men, there's a black men's call tonight. And so for the Ishmael and for the Flint, if you guys are interested in getting that national call, you can let me know. I'll be glad to send you the link. I'm just going to tell you, it was some men who infiltrated our call. It was not a whole lot, but it was some, especially from the D9. Roland Martin was on there and a few others. So I'm telling you, I'm going to be on that call. I'm going to be in the barbershop. I'm going to be in the back row, but I'm going to be in the barbershop. It was just interesting to see so many people pull together, so many coalitions pull together, and so many Republicans. There were Republicans for Biden who've transferred their loyalty to her because they just don't want to see this person in office. And their whole thing was seeing what it's going to look like. He said he will debate her on September 10th. I'll believe it when I see it. Nothing like having a prosecutor go up against somebody who's been indicted.
Convicted. And indicted. And impeached. He got all of the
yes.
Props.
Impeached. He's been convicted of, and she was really good at sexual offenders, right? And it was twice now against Jean Carroll, and then 34 felonies. And I'm just saying, okay, my five audience, I'm gonna put this out there to all of you online right now. I will be selling popcorn and Hershey's bars. It's fun. You can get your order in right now. I'm sure most of them out, so I'm going to order some back orders. And I'll give discounts for bulk orders. You know, you have to get them in so I can get them to your house before September 10th. Because this is going to be a good one.
What about some lemonade?
Some lemonade too. I'll give the lemonade to you nice and fresh. We're going to get it in some containers that will be nice and fresh. Because I believe it when I see it. That he actually shows up. I don't believe it. I just don't believe he'll actually show up. But we'll see. So,
but you know, he's just so arrogant, he might show up. He has a mental disorder. I mean,
I think he would show up just because he's that arrogant and just because he doesn't want that brown woman to take him down. I think he would show up just because of that. But I also think he's so arrogant that I don't think he would want that woman to take him down.
True.
He thinks he's above her. But he's not that smart. He's just not that smart enough to know that you need to stay away from her. She will take him down. And I am looking forward to it. There's a guy who said on... He was one of the newscasters. He said, I will pay $1,000 to somebody, to your favorite charity, if you can get me a front row ticket to that debate. He said, I want to see. People are like going online. Like, is this going to be on Ticketmaster? Because I want it. And he's like, he only wants to do it if it's on Fox. People right now are like, I don't care what you can have Sean Hannity moderate it. It's not going to matter. Wasn't it Clarence Thomas can moderate this one? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. He can have the questions and the answers in front of him.
Sorry. You, I want to go back to a point you mentioned.
You can get the
questions and answers in front of him. You mentioned Roland Martin on that call last night invading the black woman's space. I just so happened this morning came across a program Roland had. It was last week. And he had a very interesting perspective in the way that he analyzed what was going on with so many Democrats coming out asking Biden to step aside. And Roland was very clear that from his analysis, they wanted Biden to step aside, but they also wanted to discard Vice President Harris. And he gave an interesting perspective on that with getting her out of the picture. So the elites and the big money donors of the party could bring in essentially the Caucasian politicians that they, dominate to come on the ticket. So I thought that was a astute analysis that that he came up with. But I also thought that President Biden, in his timing of when he threw in the towel, was very critical too, in that it was after Trump had made his determination of a running mate. And so that showed him, a lot of commentators have said that the fact that he chose J.D. Vance shows the degree of confidence that the Republicans were feeling that they could beat the Biden-Harris ticket. And now with Biden stepping aside and Harris, you know, being proposed to be at the top of the ticket, now Trump becomes the old man in the race. And so Biden, I will give him credit. He was very crafty, because I don't think it was just happenstance. I think he was very crafty in when he made the announcement that he was going to step aside. And some of the corporate media is reporting that he adamantly opposed those who behind the scene were not supportive of Harris and were trying to encourage him to, you know, maybe put her to the side too. So Allah is in control of all of this, and you know, like the Imam said, this is the day of conclusion. We're seeing all of these things come to the surface, and we just have to be wise and look at where is the inroad for us to get our interests met, and to get also better quality candidates into office. Because in the Congress, all those seats are up. So we have to, I think, strategically also think about getting better quality candidates who have strong characters and who are not in the pocket of these PACs like AIPAC and others. So that was a comment that I wanted to make.
I think I'm in a quiet zone now. I'm going to make my 30-second comment.
Go ahead.
Assalamu alaikum, first of all. Yeah. I happened to be in a meeting with the Rules Committee, who said the mechanics of how the Democratic National Convention is going to take place. And they said specific, you know, procedures in place, how the voting will take place, et cetera. And one of our representatives, of course, from North Carolina, that committee, Abbott Porter, invited me to come on and, you know, just listen in, basically. But they've already established the procedure, and I'm somewhat familiar with that. You know, all those people who are delegates for Biden, of course, have been encouraged, of course, to vote for, Sister. And the only way they can not do that is sort of open up the convention for a, quote, short-term primary, which is going to be insane to try to do at this late date, especially on an open floor like that. So my anticipation is that, indeed, the majority of those delegates who have been commissioned to Biden will relatively smoothly go to Kamala. Now, I've been annoyed on two occasions about this whole matter. I agree 100% with how it's been assessed by Roland. I've heard too many conversations of some of these people in North Carolina who are so used to having things their way, say that indeed the money will flow if there's someone else besides Harris to show, which is an old element of racism rearing its head again as far as I'm concerned. I know the North Carolina Black Alliance of elected officials, we put forth, you know, an effort to make sure that she gets the support that she needs, as well as the National Association of Black County Officials are also pushing in that direction. Because anything less than that would really show the true colors of some of these people who pretend to represent us. And right. I'm sick and tired of that phony baloney stuff, you know. I remember 1968 in Chicago and that convention and the hell they gave up, pardon my French, but our sister from Mississippi, had to force her way to just have her voice on the floor. And all she had to go through, you know, after being beaten to death almost in Mississippi, trying to organize the Panther Democratic Party there, just to have her voice on the floor, and they still want to deny her. Mm-hmm. And it took a lot of strategism to get her even to have a voice. And it came down to a show thing. If she was not going to speak, they were not going to get the kind of support from Black Democrats on another level. So my hope is that this one in Chicago, you know, we're not have that kind of insanity, and that we can sort of get behind a candidate we can support and stop all this foolishness, you know, about other people. Even in North Carolina, there's a campaign going now. In fact, there's signs out saying Harris and Cooper. Cooper is, of course, the current governor of North Carolina, two-term governor.
Yeah.
And there's another banana trying to get him to be his her vice president, and they know each other well. They were attorney generals at the same time. They know she's been here 7 times in North Carolina campaigning, et cetera. But I hope the energy goes towards selecting someone as a vice presidential candidate and forget about trying to replace her as a presidential candidate. And I'm going to stop right there because I really got ticked off with some people. I had to sort of remember that I am a Muslim for a minute there. I was, you know, I got a very short temper for foolishness at such a late date. And this is too much at stake to be playing around and pretending and wishing and all the foolishness. This is, you know, accept what we have to deal with, work on it, and pray for the best result. But not pretend like all of a sudden somebody else out of the blue sky is going to be a better candidate for the presidency than Kamala Harris. I guess I've said enough on that. Your brother's a little ticked off behind that, so y'all forgive me if I get a little tone in my voice this afternoon. That's what I'm going to make up.
Well, I think that...
no problem. We've got a
hand. Oh, yeah, we do have another hand up, don't we? You want to go to the hand, Sister
Sarah? Yes, from Georgia. Let's see who these is from Georgia. Who we got from Georgia?
Yes, ma'am.
Who we got from Georgia? Where you calling
me? Brother Muhammad. From the Umar Prophet Muhammad, by the way, in Columbus, Georgia.
What are you doing down in Columbus?
Trying to follow the guidance of that Quran. You know that in the life of Prophet Muhammad and those who are using their natural inclination to help everybody we can in whatever situation they're in. But remember, we can only do it by following the guidance of the Quran and the life of Prophet Muhammad. Now, like the brother was talking a few minutes ago, he said exactly right on point. But the only thing about it is that we have to realize that everything is here to provoke us to what he's at the state now. And he's wise by saying he's going to back off and he knows what happened. But see, if we're going to do anything to help America, where we are right now in our development, is that if we had the Basti is, or the Muslims involved, in reminding people to vote for the laws on the books. Don't worry about all the politics and the campaign of personalities and everything. Like, our job is to encourage people in the United States of America, vote for what is on the ballot, put laws on the ballot, so when it comes time to vote, it don't make no difference who's in charge. It don't make no difference who's the governor, the mayor, the president of the United States of America, because they can't do no more than what is on the books that have passed this year or upended or been degraded, whatever. They can only follow the law. We don't need a whole country full of emotional renegades like Trump is. We don't need them type of people. And they, because they're trying to distract us with all of this chaos, and we forget to vote for very important human, moral, excellent development in the human being who is a Muslim. Everybody on this planet, knowingly or unknowingly, they are a Muslim. And Allah tells us that he has already given, ever since Adam has hit this reality, has given us a law to go by. And Shaitan has done everything with the people who he has already made slip. And so many of them have fell down now. And every time they got up, he knocked them back down again to where they have submitted to this corruption and this perversion, evil that the whole world has suffered from, including us here in America who has a job now. We have been anointed. We have been enlightened by the Creator of us and every human creature on this earth, and he has given us the law to support and establish, regardless of who's in control. Because Al-Islam and the laws of Al-Islam that are in the Quran, the life example of Prophet Muhammad, and from Allah himself has put in every human being, is for us to vote on them. So when Pamela Harris or Trump or whoever this is, they're not going to break the law real seriously unless he becomes a dictator and has enough human beings to die for that foolishness and that artificial reality, false knowledge, lies, and excessive slander. Have them die for him or die for the false position that he's making everybody think. He thinks he's better than the human being. I'm not talking about Trump personally. I'm talking about all human beings who are under that influence of telling what to do. There are so many laws in the book that protect the right of the human being. You know, so we don't want them provoking our brother, like his good brother, like what he said, and everything. You know, because we're here to establish and remake a new world, remember? We can't do that by engaging in the reality of the many worlds that are here in the United States of America. They got so many worlds in the United States of America, it'll drive you crazy if you think that one person, you know, is in charge.
I'm appreciating your comment. I know, because you get on rolling. You over here, you give me a cool spot right now. I'm appreciating.
Oh, I didn't hear you. I'm sorry. I didn't hear you tell me. Yes, ma'am.
I'm appreciating it, though. Appreciate it. I got you. You preach to the choir, though. I got you on that.
We don't have high debt. Just mess with you. We don't have no choirs in Alice, though.
I got you.
I know what you
mean. I got you on that.
Love you that.
I got you.
Yes, ma'am.
Appreciate you.
All right. Appreciate that.
Brother Muhammad brings up a point that, I know the three of us have been stressing on when the person goes to their Secretary of State or their County Election Board to see if they're registered. If they are not, then they should register. They should make sure they look at their ballot. And we've talked about the importance of looking at the judicial candidates on those ballots, those individuals who are being nominated to be judges, because we see. Now, Brother Muhammad talked about the laws that are on the books. We see how the current makeup of the Supreme Court has shifted the laws that were on the book. And so we have to be really vigilant in researching these people that are being nominated for judgeships. You know, let's say it might just be a commissioner. You know, maybe they're going to do traffic court at night, but they're on that first rung of the ladder to get up to the Supreme Court. You know, that person can go to the Superior Court, then maybe an appellate court, and then maybe a district court, and then maybe they will become a Supreme Court nominee. So we have to realize that the importance of the three branches of government, and I think we've slept on that judicial branch because we see how the Federalist Society, they did what people say is playing the long game. They had a goal of legislation that they wanted to reverse, and they very diligently, step by step, through means of state positions and recommendations to presidents on the people that should be nominated to the Supreme Court. So we have to be vigilant on the congressional and the senators that we support, because they are going to construct that language for the laws. And we all equally have to be very vigilant as far as watching who is being appointed to these court positions, these judgeships, as well as we have to stop ignoring that summons for jury duty when it comes and participate in that process. Sometimes it can be very inconvenient, but it's a necessary responsibility that we have as citizens to also serve on juries so we see what is going on in the judicial system. Complete. That's it. Thanks for your brother, Muhammad, for your comment.
Yes, and let me bring up another one. Brother, I want to bring up something different from that. Yeah.
All right, then.
Go ahead.
I was just going to add that we have participated in four different forums in this last election. One just dealing with local candidates running for the mayor. Then we had one for the city council. Then we had one for the county commissioners, the state offices, and then the judicial offices. So actually it was five different forums that we held downtown at the public library. And it was a collaboration between NAACP, the Urban League, ACGG, and Democracy North Carolina. But it's good for you to take advantage of those kind of meetings, because then you see the people that are running, and those that don't show, you don't show for them. And it gives you a chance to sort of run down the whole ballot yourself. Get your copy of the ballot. It's easy to do to access it, and you'll at least see the names on the ballot and take the time to do some research on those names if you're not acquainted with them. And judges try to slip by because they know the habit is most people do not participate in judicial voting. And those guys and girls get in with a very slim margin of votes, sometimes very few votes. And I'll end with this. We had a sister, Cherry Beasley, running for the state of North Carolina Supreme Court. She's already served. Now, she lost by 400 votes. Let me say that again. She lost by 400 votes in a state of North Carolina of almost 10 million people. And it sort of gives you an idea of the lack of participation in some of these counties. We could have done that amount in just two precincts to get to those level of participation. But they ran this ad along with some other very conservative people, put men into the campaign against these people who never held office before, and she was already established and had won a state position before. But the lack of participation is almost, in my humble estimation, criminal. We have to participate to make a difference. We can't just critique. We just can't be, ambitious in our criticism. We've got to be involved in participation in this, quote, participatory democracy. I'll stop there. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Sister Cheryl. Go right ahead, please, ma'am.
No, sir. No problem. I did want to say that we have incorporated judges for the last three or four election cycles in our candidate forum, and I do them here and in Southern California with LawPAC, the Los Angeles African Network political action, as well as in San Francisco and Sacramento and throughout Northern California.
And we do have they ask for endorsements, they ask for, you know, and they just, as part of League of Women Voters, you know, they are on voter lists. So we try and educate the voters on who they are. They're supposed to appear as a partisan, so that's another thing. You know, if you have judges who, there are some who come and tell you how out of liberal or conservative they are, I try and warn them that you're supposed to be nonpartisan. But another thing that's your attention, though, is that a lot of times we focus on those things. And thank you, Brother Muhammad, for saying something that sparked my memory on something that I did want to bring to your attention, because we focus on those high-level positions. And there's some positions, including in not just your local mayor or city council, but districts, we hear about, you know, failed infrastructure. Those are from your people on special districts. Those are your people on planning commissions and your appointed positions. Those aren't even elected positions, offices. Those are appointed positions that usually are done by elected officers. But a lot of really important decisions made in your local community are made by appointed. And so we need to be paying attention to that. But one that we should also be paying attention to is something that just came down last Friday. Is that last Friday, the Senator Gary Peters from Michigan, he's the chair of the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Government Affairs. He introduced the Enhanced Oversight and Accountability Screening Act. The legislation, the reason it's so crucial is that it's going to reform some of the practices that have been found to be discriminatory and bias in nature in these watch list systems that a lot of us and
I'm sorry, we're getting feedback.
Regardless if you're
you got a tremendous
okay, hold on.
Someone's mic. Yeah, someone's mic.
That might be you. That might be Brother. Mute you, Brother.
Okay.
Yeah, there we go. That, yeah. So regardless if you are immigrants or not, but if especially Muslim and hijabi Muslims are wearing a kimar, what we've found out, CARE, Engage, Muslim Civic Coalition, is that a lot of Muslims and religious, ethnic and religious minorities, particularly Muslims, are getting flagged in airports. I know myself, I have a lot of clearance, you guys, and I'm saying it out loud. I can't tell you the level, but I will tell you that I have clear, I have TSA pre-check, and I have government clearance because of my job. And I still get randomly checked. And I say randomly in quotes. I still get the tag inside of my bag that says your bag has been pulled to be randomly searched. They never find anything because I don't have anything. I pack knowing that it's going to be searched. I dress in a way that I know I'm going to get, you know, bad down, even though I shouldn't because I have TSA pre-check and I clear. And Senator Peters introduced this working with Engage Action because the whole thing is, yes, we need to balance national security, but we have to balance that with civil rights and liberties and our civil liberties. So they've introduced this bill, especially for people who've been on this so-called watch list, because the watch list disproportionately targets, you know, Muslims, ethnic minorities, religious minorities. And the criteria for who gets searched and when is pretty random. And it's flawed. And it's tantamount to just increased government monitoring for no reason at all. So there was a notice put out by Engage, asking us, some of us signed on to it, and we'll see what happens with it. I'm watching it on my list of legislation to watch. When I get to D.C. in a few weeks, I'll be going and speaking to some of the legislators, asking them to make sure that they sign on to it. You know, a lot of us have been wrongly identified, you know, as not just, you're only supposed to be flagged if you're a threat. So any type of process where you're just flagging people because they're Muslim, or, I mean, there's nuns who've been flagged for no reason at all either. So it has to be fair and it has to be transparent. So how does that occur? You have to have the right people on the right committees as well. So appointees are also important. How do appointees get to those positions? It starts with the administration. And so the administration itself has is also of concern to us. So it's not just who is the president. It's very important. Who also is in the House and the Senate is very important. Who the appointees are is very important. So it's not just the elected office. It's also the appointees in those offices on both the local, federal, and state level. All three levels of government is important. I wanted to bring that up because it often does not get said enough, and we often don't pay attention to it because we're so focused on those elected positions. But those appointed positions, which I know people have heard about this Project 25, but that is where the heart of taking people out of positions and putting in loyalists is going to cause a problem, if that makes sense to you. And I really want to hear from Sister Amrani about what she heard at the convention, because that is going to explain a lot to people. I want to take a quick break, but I do want to come back and hear from you, Sister. Madam.
I'm here.
Okay. Let's take a quick break. Pay some bills for the station, and then we will hear from you. Amakla, good? Sabrina?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, they're
trying to. All right. And then we'll try and get Brother Fleming back on if it sounds better. All right, one moment. Hold tight, everybody. Here we go.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Fitra Muhammad bringing you good news. Study Our Islam Life Topic Series 2020 is back. How many times have you wondered when reading the Quran, what were the challenges and circumstances that Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, was facing when Allah sent the angel Gabriel with inspired revelation? Join us at 10 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time every Sunday to learn from our scholarly speakers. If you were unable to connect because your carrier charged the fee, you may now listen online at am360.org. For a complete schedule of our speakers, email studyourislam@gmail.com or pick up the Muslim Journal. Thank you.
Why?
Why?
Why are you following me?
Why does my hoodie make me look suspicious?
Why does my music make me dangerous?
Why are people that are supposed to protect me attacking me?
Why are you afraid of me? Why do you think I'm dangerous?
Why do I fear the people who are supposed to protect me?
Why can't I make a peace sign without you labeling the gang sign?
Why does standing on ground only work when I'm on the ground?
Why do you show this photo over this one?
Why do you only stop and frisk me?
Why do you have low expectations for me?
Why can't I run down the street without causing alarms?
Why do you think I'm a thug?
Why do you assume I'm armed?
Why can't I breathe? Why is my mom scared every time I leave the house?
Why are you targeting me? Why am I a target?
Why?
Why? Why? I know why.
And it has to stop. It must stop.
Because I have dreams. Because I can change the world.
Because I will make a difference.
Because I have a family.
Because I am strong.
Because I am talented.
I have a voice.
I can find the cure.
I have goals.
I can lead the country.
I am determined.
I have a future.
Because I'm a scholar.
I am powerful.
I'm someone's friend. I'm someone's brother.
I'm someone's son.
So I love you.
And because my life matters too.
My life matters.
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 Our lives matter.
And so did theirs.
Our climate is changing. Making a few changes around your home and yard can cut carbon emissions and even save you money. Swap out 5 of your most used light bulbs with CFLs or LEDs. Change air filters regularly, lower your thermostat in the winter, and raise it in the summer. Recycle newspapers, beverage bottles, and food containers. Reduce your carbon impact to the environment. Act now on climate change.
How many times have you wanted to make a change?
Change in our schools, in our environment, and in our relationship with other countries.
Well, guess what? You can make that change. All you have to do is vote for the people who you feel will bring about these changes. It is not enough to complain or just hope that things will get better. Stop backseat driving and steer our country where you think it should go. Some people think that one vote doesn't matter, but each vote gives politicians a better understanding of the opinions of the people they are representing. Opinions on important issues such as gun control, education reform, immigration, climate change, and abortion. Without our vote, they would have no idea what we think of these issues. In the last presidential election, only 57.5% of eligible citizens voted. That means politicians are unaware of the opinions of nearly half of the country. Each vote is a chance to speak your mind and work towards a better country and a better world. So vote for someone who you think could help us get there. Vote for how you want our country to change.
Why should I vote? Nothing ever changes. The system is rigged. Why bother? Whether you're trying to get dinner on the table after working a double shift, dropping baby off with grandma, or studying for exams, voting can feel like the furthest thing from your mind. You might even feel like it's just not worth it. But that's exactly what some people want you to think. The truth is, when we stay home, things stay the same or they get worse. But when we all vote, we get new ideas and new energy. We get leaders who share our values and listen to our voices. That's how we change America. And that's why it's so important to register right now and vote this November. And in every election, go to whenweallvote.org or text WeAllVote to 97779 to get started and know that your vote will make a difference.
All right. We are back live with Muslim American Power 5, Map 5. I am joined by Sister Amatala Elijah Zabri, Brother Fleming El-Amin, and I am Cheryl Suttis. And we have with us Sister Amatala Rani from ACGG, and she, based in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, was on the ground during the Republican National Convention last week. And we welcome her. We wanted to hear some of your insights as to what was really going on. Last week, I happened to be in Philadelphia last week when shenanigans was going down, and then you got to be there in part two. Talk to us. Tell us what you saw from your perspective, madam.
Okay.
Floor
is
yours.
Okay. Yes. Well, I first want to say that I observe most things not as a politician, neither as a an expert in the political arena, but just as a very concerned citizen whose perspective comes from mainly from my work and mental health people watching fields. And so, but what I observed just from all of my lenses was, first of all, in regard to the city itself, and it was interesting how the federal government took charge of some of the areas related to the RNC, beginning with who could actually get clearance to come into the actual arena. The other thing that the federal government took charge of was in regard to the area of security, the area that was, we can't even say fenced off, because they actually brought in concrete boulders or concrete, what do you call, barriers, concrete barriers. So there was, it was very, very serious about the area that you were not able to access. I guess the concern for anyone would be, how does the city itself benefit from something like this? I mean, we kept hearing about what it was going to do for the city and et cetera and et cetera. And so as a person close by, it was extremely disruptive. And I guess one thing that was highlighted for me, too, was how little the local police, how little information they could share in regard to if this particular street is going to be blocked off, or they closed expressways at various times, and they would put a sign up, it's going to be closed down at a particular time, and then for whatever reason, they would decide that they need to close it off or something else. So if the citizens of the city receive some type of a benefit, then I could see your city in the future or our city receiving that type of disruption. But the money that comes into the city, and you all that are directly in politics probably know better than I, but I was told that the money gets sent, at least in Wisconsin, gets sent to the state, and then the state legislature has to determine what portion of the money actually comes back to the city in terms of, I think it's called shared revenue or something to that effect. So that was one of the first things that I observed, was that the Secret Service actually had taken charge because it was a national political event. And then another thing was in regard to the outside police forces that came into the city, and I firmly believe that that death would not have occurred of the 43-year-old man if the local police had been dealing with him, because the homeless people had that encampment. They had originally had it kind of close to downtown, and when the DNC was scheduled to come here a couple of years ago, and they had cleared them out, and so they go in this other area, and so most of the citizens that live in that area knew about them. So by Ohio police being assigned to that area, then they end up shooting the man who had a knife. But anyway, so those were some of the observations as being a citizen in the city. Now, in regard to the persons that were visiting, there was actually very little interaction. You were not allowed to go in the security zones, and unless you lived in the security zones or worked and had all these clearances. And then the people that were actually visiting some of them said it was too much of a hassle to try to go back through security, so they just stayed within security zone, so they did not interact with the citizens as much as they may have. And an interesting thing that I did get to interact a little with a group that was called, I think it was called Black Conservative, and I'm sorry, I should have had that pulled up, but I was trying to get my focus was going to be on trying to get African-Americans or people of color, but especially African-American feedback as to just their impressions and whatnot and why they had chosen to be there and how were they interpreting some of the things that they were hearing and seeing. So I had we had requested, and when I mean we, that's Muslim Journal, that I'm a somewhat regular contributor to. So they were, I'll pull it up in a minute, they did give a cookout or some cookouts from what I hear in the so-called Central City. And so we were trying to interview them, but it was not very successful because some of the questions that I wanted to ask and still want to ask was in regard to how they view conservatism. And then another thing was how do they view making America great again, the greatness that they envision look like for African Americans and for lower income people. And I'm not implying that all African Americans are lower income, but those are just two demographics that I have an interest in. And so when I was able to talk to one of them just for a few minutes at the cookout, and they were obviously, you know, trying to get that done. So I didn't ever get my interview that we had actually requested, Muslim Journal, and I had requested more or less talking to people on the run. And so I did not get a comprehensive, cohesive interview with anyone. One of the men did get to tell me that they look upon conservative values as being what your grandmother taught you, that's the way you put it. And so I didn't, again, get a chance to give any feedback regarding to, you know, where the values of truthfulness and not being faithful, how are certain values focused on and then the other values not. And also if people did find themselves in a situation of being pregnant without being married, then how did the community, what did the community do in order to try to help protect that life? And why is this something that has to become a crime if a person, and this latter part I got directed from Imam Muhammad, if a person has been found to be in that particular situation, then they they do need the support of the community, and they do need to know that even though what they did, you know, may not have been looked upon positively, that they have the support, because sometimes people would not feel they would have to make drastic decisions such as abortion if they did not have the if they had the support and well, I just said the support of the family and the community to not condemn them and not make them. So I guess I'll slow down here for a minute in case someone had a question, a concern about something I said so far. But just a general observation just prior to the convention and afterward was in regard to the real disadvantage or danger of stretching out these political so-called seasons. There is no way, in my opinion, that the campaign should last the months and months and months that it does, because it takes people's minds away from the hundreds of issues that are occurring fully on the state level and nationally, and just put it onto theater and just theater. Acting, you know, it becomes great performances. And as a person in the mental health field, I observe that this also forces people to select a candidate very early based on the feeling that they get, the emotion that they get, things that are very superficial. And once people have decided, in general, this is not everybody, but once people have decided that this is my candidate, then it doesn't matter what the truth is. It's taking your stance and protecting and defending your guy or your girl. So anyway, I'll slow down here a minute if anybody had any comments or questions about anything I said so far.
That last part is really interesting. Once people have staked their claim on a person, the way that they're invested in them, it doesn't really matter what the policies or anything is. That's an interesting concept. It looks like Brother Ishmael, I think this is a new hand for you. Did you have a new question or comment, sir?
I didn't put my hand down, but I wanted y'all to touch on if Biden really does have COVID and is bad, what are the chances of him stepping down and just letting Kamala step in as president now, and how would that look? That was my question. But I'm still listening, so y'all can talk about that later.
Okay, we'll come back to that. But, I think he just balled out his last few months. Well, no, true for me. You ball out. What they going to do to him?
You go ahead. Forgive all these student loans, bro. Sign them off. What they going to do?
Well, I'll give my, I'll give my last. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Okay. My last point had to do with the insufficiency, the lack of political maturity of many of the so-called journalists. The questions that are being asked are show very little depth, show very little understanding. You will have a person interviewing a congressperson and then asking them about reckless driving or something. I mean, it was pretty frustrating, and especially, I hate to say it, our African American hosts. That's what they are. They start off as radio hosts, and then they get their press pass or whatever, so then they become journalists. The questions, they did not give follow-up. A person, some of the people were just answering anything. I mean, just with showing no real answers, you know, no depth to what they were saying. And they were just allowed to get by with all of this, with all of this nonsense and with this meaning. And
right.
So that was just very frustrating because I was like, well, did you hear what they said? They didn't even answer your question. You know, come on. Or they just half answered your question. Come on, follow up. You know, and then and focus on the position that the person is in, rather than these general questions of whether they believe Trump is racist or not. I don't want to hear anybody ask that question anymore. So anyway, sound like somebody else has something that they want to add.
No, I see this, sister. I'm glad you mentioned it, and because we just had this conversation on Saturday. As we're preparing to do endorsement interviews. And I brought it up myself, but I brought it up about candidate forms and candidate questionnaires because for me, you have the frustration as a journalist. I have the frustration as an endorsement committee. And Brother, Brother Fleming, you can probably weigh in on this as well. The frustration is that because and sister, my really, this Sabri, this is what we're talking about at the study hall at Conversation. Too many people don't understand the roles of some of these positions. So it's easy to ask questions of a congressperson that really they don't have domain over local issues. So they'll ask questions about what are you going to do about to fix housing. What are you going to do about our school district? And you know, the inexperienced candidate will try and answer that question. You can't fix housing in the district. You can't fix the school. That's a local issue. You can't mandate, you know, the rent situation in a local area. But why are you even asking them that question as a reporter or as a you know, a moderator of a local forum, or you're asking a local candidate about the situation in Gaza. Why are you asking them about foreign policy? They have no domain over foreign policy. Or you're asking them about, you know, fracking policies on the East Coast when we live in, if they live in, like, the Central Valley of California. And so they're asking these questions where they have no domain. Or they're working for a water board, and you asking them what they're going to do about, you know, improving test scores at the local university. So it's part of this is not understanding the roles and the responsibilities of some of the positions. And some of this is just the candidates themselves not understanding where they're their influence and so-called power lies. They can't sign into law anything on their own either. They can't do anything on their own, quite frankly. Not one single person on the local, state, the federal level. Even the president has limited authority to sign anything into existence. Yes, they have some executive orders, and some of those executive orders can be overturned with a certain amount of congressional unity.
Right.
So I think some of this is the lack of civic education. But if you're going to be a journalist doing politics, you should have some civic education. And if you're going to be someone who is be a moderator or facilitator of a candidate forum, you need to have done your homework on the positions and the issues. And that's why we get these forums where they used to just spout all kind of mistruths and there's no fact-checking or anything of that sort. And that's what frustrates me. So I'm just saying I feel you, I hear you.
and I'm right there in the bed next to you at the hospital.
And we are, I guess, somewhat fortunate in Milwaukee that we do have African-American people as hosts of some radio programs. But as I said earlier, these people are hopping from being radio hosts to now being journalists. And, of course, as a radio host, anybody's going to want to come on to get their message across. And so that was one of my big frustrations. And they did get a chance, some of the African-Americans did get a chance to actually go to the actual event. And they interviewed some people there and broadcast it as well, some delegates as well as some of the elected officials. And some had the nerve to say that they were treated so well, and people treated them so nicely, and what a nice time they had. And so I guess it worked what they were trying to accomplish by bringing them there and quote treating them nice, even down to Eric. We won't say his last name. Even in how nice he was when they interviewed him. So I should have put this when you were asking me earlier about what had my scarf twisted off to the side. That was probably it, more than anything from the past week. And the other thing, the final thing, was that this man who was being interviewed from the, and I was supposed to be bringing his, now I'm not going to give him any free advertisement. Anyway, he was a black conservative group. And he was being interviewed. He said, well, and black folks, you've been following this other group all of your life, and what did you get from it? What do you got to lose? And so I did get to cross paths with him, and I said, I heard your interview, and I want to tell you, as a person who almost lost her life, along with the attempt on my dad's life, because if we had gone over the side of that ditch when they fired into our car, then I possibly would have been dead too, along with my dad, him from the bullet wounds and me from the car wreck. So I said, we do have things that we can lose, because I'm old enough or young enough to remember when things were different, even in terms of the right to vote. I said, so I really hope you reconsider, if you interviewed again, that there are things that we can lose. He turned his back on me and started back to turning over the food that he was doing on the grill for their cookout, you know, to try to get the African American, you know, get some turnout to learn about their black conservative organization. So I guess I shouldn't end on a frustrating note. Let me see. What's something positive? Oh,
Did you maybe I
can come up with something. I can come up with something. But anyway, no, those were my outstanding memories from the past week.
Did you ask him, since he was a conservative, did you ask him, turning your back on your elder, is that something your grandma taught you? Because
well,
that was
actually
supposed to be the tagline, right?
That was the different one. I told you, I was shuffled through three different people, and I couldn't get a coherent interview. And then this one, I would get so far with him, and he said, well, I have to go back out to the car and, you know, get some more burgers or whatever. I have to get this set up. So I ended up talking to three different people. So that was a different one that told me about the grandmother. Yeah, so
okay.
I didn't get to finish with him because, yes, I was ready to tell him about my parents' values and my values too.
So it's just such a stereotypical view. So they have a cookout for the black people because we like barbecue. Is that it? Because I don't eat barbecue, so let me just.
Well, they were trying to, yeah, they were trying to give to find a way to interact with citizens, you know, who did not make it downtown. So I guess, you know, to that extent, I can understand what you're saying.
So go ahead and feed you some pork ribs, right?
Was the event well attended? Did people from the community come to the event?
Did people from the community come to the event?
Yeah.
It was a handful.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I'm just okay.
I think we have another hand up, Michelle.
Okay. I got to get my composure, so go ahead and grab it.
Is this Brother Muhammad again? Okay, caller, the last four digits are 7426.
Yes, ma'am. Assalamu alaikum again. Y'all been saying some wonderful things, and I just wanted to quote two things. Allah says in the Quran, and he tells us that's our responsibility. If we see anyone running for an office through the prophet, this message came to us, that we don't let that person get that spot. Because as you were just telling in the interview that you were saying that you were having and some of the people hired to react, the another thing comes to mind where Prophet Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam told Jibril, the questioner knows no more than the one who's asking the question. Because that only belongs to Allah. But we are being blessed in our situation where Allah has told us how to deal with most situations. And he said if they're campaigning for five weeks, now if he tells us we not to do that, do we think it's right that regardless of you in France or Germany or wherever you're at, do you think it's right that we're supposed to interfere in the affairs to the point where we forget about the law for human development that Allah has given to everyone to as a test from the shaitan to keep him from proving that he's better than us? And as long as we have been, the human family has been going through this development, to where we're now at the final place where we know the truth already. We know exactly what to do, what to say, what to model, what to establish, you know. Even, and it's all outside of the many ways of life that Allah says you and your ancestors all the way to Adam have the experience. This is the best way to follow this way I've given you in what is called Al-Islam. Put your will in my will and you won't go wrong. If you do what I say do, and do and have the human capacity of Ibrahim to where you say my life and my death is all for establishing what is best for the human family on this earth. If their free will has been educated in the commands of the creator of them, we have not created ourselves. So again, one of the best things to do in our situation in regards to where are you on this earth since we are going through this test is to tell the people who have been appointed, like the sister was saying about the don't worry about the one who is responsible for getting in the office. It's the people who he makes his appointments has the responsibility of doing the work. We are to appeal to the worker, the appointee, the ones who did the campaign for the situation, a person of common sense and trying to use the benefit that maybe he's already aware that Allah wants the human being to do, or he's under the influence of Shaitan and take the opposite and try to make sure that they don't do it, then we have to appeal to the appointees and tell them the law that they have already have under their permission from Allah to help guide this person regardless of what their intention is. Or you can protest in a positive way and get rid of them. You know, So we have to, and so we have to learn the wisdom of what Allah has been telling us, and look at how that us engaging in all the ways of the world that's against human development, al-Islam, and we have to put or get the balance of how to interpret what Allah is telling us in the Quran, what Allah is telling us in the life of Prophet Muhammad, so that we can encourage people to do the right thing, you know. And we know mostly all of the people under the influence of the Quran, one way or the other, that goes for Marcus Garvey, they go for, they always were told to leave the environment that you was in if you're not going to change it. With dealing with the people who are responsible for doing it. And those are appointees. Those are not the campaigners. Those are not the kings and the queens. All they have to do is been through, but they appoint people who are supposed to help do that. Or those people will do like Musa did. He will, once he found out what his real responsibility was and was appointed to be in the language that we know and educate and learn, to be the Messiah, went back to the bottom, right back to foundation, and then pulled his people out of that participating into the temptation, except for the few people we know in history who were seduced by the gold, the money, the nice home, being the house Negro, you know, as opposed to being a worker and builder, et cetera. So, again, we have to always look at it. This is a voice. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, let me let them respond now. Come on now.
Yes,
I got to listen.
Take a deep breath now.
I need to listen. I want them to respond now. Hold on a second. Let me get Brother Fleming. Yes, Vander. And then Sister Amrani. I want them to respond. You got some good comments in there.
Are we still broadcasting?
Yes.
Oh,
okay. Yeah, we extended the time.
I'm going to let Sister Amrani and then Brother Fleming, I got you all back on air with us now. Sister Amrani, you got a response to Brother Muhammad and then Brother Fleming. I got both of you.
No, I actually don't. I'll pass. Thank you. Thank you, Brother, though, for your comments.
Thank you. And then Brother Fleming, back with us.
Brother Fleming, we can't hear you. I don't know if you're on mute. Okay.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Can you hear me? Okay, I'm sorry. Yes. But just very quickly. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Something's going on here. All right, then.
Go ahead.
Let me thank Brother Muhammad again for his comments. I would also encourage him, though, take the time to really review that last constitution Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, left for us as a guide, and that was the Medina Charter on how they governed Medina once he became the person in charge of that community. And that's a guidepost even for us today on how we should conduct our governmental affairs. Beyond that, I want to just make a comment very quickly about what has happened to our whole electoral process. It's almost become a corporation making big bucks from advertisement. And that's why it runs so long. I've always advocated for a shorter campaign season and let the people decide what they want to do. But to run a campaign for 2 years, if you look at the amount of money that's made from campaign ads, it's phenomenal. And finally, I've been working for about 3 years on this wait watch list they have at these airports, along with CARE and USMCO, trying to get that adjusted. And it's sometimes like pulling bricks, because once your name is on that list, you have to go through 7 gates of stuff to get your name removed off that list. And it's a very cumbersome process. And they don't give you the real reason why your name is on there. And I've had one of my daughters involved in that, so I have a personal effort on that. And I've been doing it for 3 years, walk the halls of Congress, talk to representatives, trying to get them to at least support legislation to get that changed. So it is an issue. And finally, the committees of these elected officials have the opportunity to elect people from the community on are the backbone of your local government. Committees such as your adjustment committee, when you have a problem with your assessment of your house when it comes to property taxes, there's an adjustment committee you can go to make your appeal. There are a number of different committees like that that are appointed by your local elected officials that are volunteer positions that you can become a part of and really make an impact without being an elected official. And I'll stop there. And Charlotte can talk more about how this whole process works, how you become a delegate to this RNC or the DNC, what the process is all about, because we need to understand that process and how these delegates arrive at these different destinations, whether it be Milwaukee or Chicago for that matter. Inshallah, we'll continue this next Monday and get some more meat on the bones as we go forward, inshallah. Thank you very much. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam. Sister Cheryl, in response to some of the comments that Brother Muhammad made, I'll read a selection from comments by Imam Muhammad at the 2004 Ramadan session, where he states that Al-Islam is democracy. Al-Islam is democracy. And he starts off by saying, we know in the case of Muhammad the Prophet, peace be upon him, when he himself made appointments, he sought the support of the most qualified ones in terms of good character and knowledge. He sought their support for the person who he would appoint. Many times he didn't appoint persons at all. Most of the time, he left it to the people to appoint people to represent them in positions of authority. Al-Islam, for want of a better word, is a democracy. The expression in Al-Islam is shura bainahum. That is, they consult one another. They have mutual consultation, respecting each other as equals, equally qualified to give advice, to contribute to decision-making. Bainahum means just that, mutual. I offer my advice, and also another person has the same right, and he offers his advice, and then we look at all of it and make a conclusion based upon the strongest support that we have from those qualified persons. This is the main description, I would say, of democracy in Al-Islam. This is the main focus for our understanding and perception of how we should manage our affairs. And God says the believers manage their affairs by shura bainahum. So from that comment and that description that Imam Muhammad gives us, I think it's important for us to extract from the example, the life example of the Prophet. And we know that before his transition, Imam Muhammad encouraged us to really study the life of Prophet Muhammad. So I really appreciate Brother Fleming's reminder of the Medina Charter, because we know that we can extract guidance from that also as far as how the living of the Quran was established in Medina. And I think that when we look at what's going on in our society now and the political environment, that those of us who are Muslims, that we can extract these examples that Imam Muhammad and other scholars have given us as far as the application of the Quran and the example of the Prophet to our current situation. It may not fit at all times. It may not be 100% congruence of what existed then and how it was applied and how we apply it now. But the challenge for us is to gain the knowledge and find the way that we can apply those directives and guidelines that we get from the Quran and the example of the Prophet. And I think I'll use an example that went very viral when there was this hearing, congressional hearing, and the dialogue that took place between Marjorie Taylor Greene and first Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and then Jasmine Crockett, where we see rather than consultation, there's more confrontation. And from confrontation, you are not going to get to the solution of a problem. This was a congressional hearing, so they weren't necessarily looking for a solution. It was more what they call performative politics. But I just cite that as an example of as Muslims, as believers, and as we encourage and try to get more Muslim believers, like-minded people into these important congressional and senatorial positions, both on the state and the federal level, that we look for people who really have skills in mediation and negotiation and drafting legislation for these important positions. Because when you get really, for lack of a better word, ignorant people or emotional people or provocative people in positions and they are elected just on their personalities, this is when we have these kind of roadblocks and stumbling blocks as far as actually getting good legislation passed. You know, the John Lewis Act hasn't passed. There hasn't been effective gun regulation passed. You know, so immigration reform, all of these things are blocked because of the low quality of character and knowledge of people who are sitting in the Congress. Character, those who are bought off and paid off, as Brother Fleming said, because of the tremendous cost of running a campaign. We need to have campaign reform on the state and the federal level. That's it. Just some thoughts that came to mind. Thank you.
I appreciate that. I think that is absolutely caller ending in 4506. You are live. Okay.
Assalamu alaikum. Can you hear me? Okay. I hope you can hear me. I've been having some trouble with my phone. This is Sister Mahasan Abdul Salam. Homegirl of the Californians, I'll put it like that. So pleased to be able to listen to such a quality program as MAP 5 every Monday. And I wanted to commend yesterday's interview and presentation. Greetings, number one, to everybody. Alhamdulillah, and appreciate being able to utilize this forum. Sister Cheryl said it, your presentation yesterday on the study Al-Islam presentation was marvelous. And I hope that there's a method by which we can experience the recording all over again of the replay. I would like to link it to certain people that I think would really benefit from hearing your presentation. Just beautiful, very succinct, and full of guidance. And the other thing is we hadn't anticipated a number of the political adjustments, I call it, that have been made over the last 24, maybe 48 hours. So we are experiencing what I've always considered in my life, that Allah, as Allah's plan, that only He can plan adjust. He gives a heads up to those who are making an effort to be in touch with following the twists and turns of society and being prepared to fight, as we take Satan and his schemes. We know that there are a number of people who think it's their purpose is to create schemes in society and to distract. But agreeing with Sister Amatala, the
the brief statement that you just made, bringing us to that stage of clarity, it took me back to one of the books published by Imam Ronald B. Shaheen called The Attaining the Ethical Society. And these are a collection of thoughts of W.D. Muhammad. I do recommend that people solicit and get a copy and read this, because it was toward the end of Imam Muhammad's culmination. And he spoke about it, and I'd like to quickly read this little paragraph. It was under the on page 100 of The Best of Communities. Imam Muhammad said, so in addressing the munkar, the vices, etc., in our society, many times we can't take the law into our own hands. This reminded me of something, comment that you made, Sister Amantala. Excellent. He says, however, the help for this situation is provided for, because Prophet Muhammad said we are obligated to correct the wrong when we see it with our hands, if you find the circumstances fit. And if we can't find the circumstances to correct it with our hands, then take charge of it with our tongues. And he said, speak out against it. However, sometimes the circumstances won't even allow us to speak out against it. We will get shot, killed, locked up, taken from our families, sometimes just for speaking out against the wrong under a dictator or a tyrant, a terrible ruler or a terrible regime. So sometimes we can't even speak out against it. And he said, at least have it in your heart to be against it. And that's the weakest of faith. That's an honorable hadith. And this is the saying of Prophet Muhammad. So we in the best of communities, he said, we're looking at what qualifies a community to be called the best of communities. They believe in the best standard. They're faithful in the proven standard. And the best standards that we can recall and that we know of in human existence or in the existence of human people or society. They're on the best of standards. They prohibit. They stand against the wrongdoing, the wrong values, the wrong behavior, the wrong standards that empty the human being of all of its worth that God deposited in his soul when he created him. And that is what the munkar does. It empties out all of the good that God deposited in your soul when he created you for your great good future. Munkar will take it out. In time, it is all gone, and you are worthless when you are created to be noble and excellent. So I'll stop right there. Thank you for allowing me the time to share that.
Thank you for that. Thank you, Mr. Mahathir. Appreciate it. And I'm going to pass it to Sister Matla about Study al-Islam, because she has all the details. And so I'll get any information on replay or copies of anything. I out of my lane.
Okay. Well, what will happen? Those who are subscribed to the Study al-Islam newsletter, in the newsletter that comes out this week, you'll probably get it Friday or Saturday. You can go to that newsletter, and there will be a part. Let me see. Let me put my glasses on. There'll be a section in the newsletter where you can go to previous, especially the one that was broadcast the Sunday before, and you just click on it and it will bring up the recording. Also, Study al-Islam, with the presentation, the excellent presentation that Cheryl gave yesterday, we had a call to action to find out if folks would be interested in some civic training. And so I will get, inshallah, from Sister Marsha and Sister Fitcher those who have that interest, and then we'll see how we can facilitate that, inshallah, for the Study Al-Islam audience and for everyone, you know, the like-minded people, followers, and people in our community. So we'll, once we have that and organized, inshallah, we will broadcast that and, you know, promote it so that people become aware of that activity.
That, sister, that, I had
that's
seen,
what we talked about.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I was saying I had seen some previous Study Al-Islams on YouTube. I don't know about this most recent one, but I had come across some on YouTube.
The ones that you'll find in the ones that you'll find in the newsletter, they are uploaded to the YouTube channel. So, I picked up the one that was for us, so I won't find that one yet. The one from the previous week is what I will look for. And I'll get back and let you know the exact URL for that, Sister Hassan. Okay, here may be one here.
And just while she's doing that, Sister Ronnie and Brother Fleming, just so you know, you were volunteered to assist with this civics training. It's not just me.
Yeah,
I mean, okay. I like doing it, but it was ACGG was also volunteered to be on the panel.
We'll share the ACE curriculum with you, the Ambassador Specific Engagement for Young People. So that'll be a helpful thing, I think, as a part of the whole presentation, inshallah.
I'm going to share it with the people
and with my sisters. we'll share it with the public, of course, inshallah.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Sister Cheryl, can I just say this? So when you the news there, when you get to the newsletter, under the box that says donate and just above the Muslim Journal, it'll say subscribe for more SAI recordings. And when you click on that, it will bring you to the link in the Study Al-Islam, our series video archive. And you'll have to scroll down and you'll see the recording from the previous Sunday. So the recording that's available now is the one from last week with Sister Amila, I believe. No, Khalid Shah, Brother Khalid, 714, Brother Khalid Shah. And you can click on that. When you click on that, it'll take you to the recording, and that'll be available for you. I hope that answers your question, Sister Mahasim. And they are on YouTube, you know, with a private channel in YouTube.
Yeah.
So I'm finished, Sister Will.
I need to sign out in the very near future, so.
Yes. Before you leave, I wanted to say this because it was something that, as we go through these last few months of this election season, something that Brother Fleming just said, you know, we 2 years of campaigning, and it is an expensive venture. But what I've learned, and especially last night of watching, and a friend of mine was on, a bunch of us on, and we had a text stream going on our phone. And it was about 15 minutes, 20, maybe half an hour, into raising money. It was like $600 raised. And she's on a school board, and she was just blown away. She was like, you know, and we can't get parents to donate money to the school. But here we are raising this money in like record time.
Because I understand it, and I don't think it should be either or. It should be an and. And I want us to, Sister Matla said earlier about making sure we get people in the right places with share our values. And Sister Amrani said that about getting people in the right places to share our values, so, especially when it comes to journals. But Fleming mentioned that when it comes to, you know, looking at or we're interviewing and our judges, and he said, and we've said this on numerous cases in the program. It's having run for office several times, won some seats, didn't win some seats. Those signs don't pay for themselves. Those fees don't pay for themselves. With billboards and getting into office is not a low income venture. And if we can afford to do this for candidates, and then we have people talking about, I'm going to hold my nose and vote for a candidate. You can't do this off of wishes and dreams. So if we identify candidates in our community, we identify candidates, whether they're Muslim or they're people who are affiliated with the Muslim community and doing the work that benefits the Muslim community, we have to find a way to establish a PAC, a political action fund, that's going to put the money behind those candidates so we can have people in office. The reason I went on that talk earlier about people who are appointed or people who are in office that are going to have our back in office. We have to find a way. We got to loosen some purse strings and put some money in there. We can find money to complain. We can find money to make sure we have people in office and an influence making positions and roles to do the work. We have people who are willing to do it. We just got to make sure we're willing to stand behind them. And gone are the days that we can sit back and wish and hope coulda, shoulda, woulda doesn't work. We've got to be willing to put some funding behind people and actually identify who they are before election year. It's 2 years out, you guys. 18 months, 2 years is the minimum to start doing this. We should be looking towards 26 and 28 right now. As told us for me. But we need to be doing this now. We've got 90 seconds. Who wants to say something before I hit the last 5, 6, 1, 2, 4, 6, 8,
all right.
10 words?
30 seconds only. Brother David Shaheed, Judge Shaheed, has a PAC in Indiana organized trying to encourage judicial participation and candidates to run. So we do have a model already established. He's had a very successful PAC out there for a while. So we do have a somewhat of a blueprint we can use to establish even more PACs. We need that at a very minimum, inshallah.
Thank you.
So,
Sister Amrani,
go ahead. Inshallah, go ahead. No, let Amrani go.
No, I didn't have any comments. Were you did you want me to comment on something? So otherwise,
yes,
no, I didn't have anything on what was just said.
Okay. Well, I do have a comment. So I think Brother Fleming, we need to arrange a time to meet with Judge Shaheed so that we can use this model and get that into, you know, get the motion started for that, because the reality is, you know, like Act Blue, I don't like some of the hooks that they use. You know, they hook you in for a
service.
You know, if you want my money, just come out front. Ilhel Omar, with her hooks, she say, look, I need $3, you know. But this is like the third time this week she sent me this request for $3. She knows I'm going to give her more than $3.
I know.
You know, but at least she's out front with it. So we need PACs, we need think tanks, we need, you know, to get strategists together so that we can really get a machinery, like Cheryl said, for 26 and 28. And that's all
yes,
I have
ma'am.
To say.
Yes, ma'am. We'll
right.
make that happen then, inshallah.
With that, I will tell you that change what you want and
change how you act. Let's get to work. Vamos. We got a few months.
Vamos.
And it's going to come fast. Vamos. It's getting done. Thank you so much for listening. We appreciate you. Inshallah, we will see you here next week. Same time, same channel. Hopefully. Same channel.
Yes. Inshallah.
Yes.
You say inshallah.
Have a great week. You guys do something. Exercise your civic responsibility and your obligations to yourself and your community. Stay involved. Link your purpose, your faith, and your service. Have a great day and have a great week. Inshallah. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.